Welcome back, everybody, to the Best Seat at the Track, the Front Stretch Podcast. I'm your host, Davey Siegel, per usual. We got a real cool interview, a double dose, Will Rogers and Sam Hunt on this week to discuss a very important and impressive new partnership in the Xfinity Series this season. Plus, Brian Gable, he's a wordsmith over at frontstretch.com, and he's going to tell those words to us. Let's get this episode started.
Buggity, buggity, buggity! Let's go racing, boys!
Green flag is out on the Front Stretch Podcast. Want to welcome on Brian Gable to the show. Brian, we saw another butt whooping this past Sunday at Sonoma. And another butt whooping by the same guy we saw the week before. Kyle Larson wins every stage, gets a whole lot of playoff points, a whole lot of stage points. Not much else to say for the second week in a row other than this combination is absolutely lethal.
Boy, we sure did see a butt whooping. I was a little bit surprised to see Larson just go out and dominate like that. We've seen times before when back when he was driving for Chip Ganassi Racing, where he would show speed at Sonoma from time to time. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, start out races well, but not necessarily take care of his equipment well enough or get those finishes. And even now that he's with Hendrick, you wouldn't have thought that this would have been a track where Larson would go out and just hand it to the field like that. Right. You think of tracks where Kyle Larson's good. It's those momentum tracks we can ride the high lane and just rip off those laps, but not necessarily road courses. So to see that on Sunday, to see him have such a dominant run and hold off somebody of Chase Elliott's caliber on the road courses, especially after those last few late race restarts to do that, I think it's a sign that Larson, now that he's with Hendrick, has becoming one of those drivers who can win, going from one of those drivers who can win occasionally to becoming somebody who, okay, this is a guy who can win and contend for wins every single week.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's interesting, too, because, it's his home racetrack, and he said that it didn't really add anything to it. I mean, sure, it's cool to win at his home track, but I think any time a driver is competing at their home track, they get a little bit more hype for it. You know what I mean? I mean, you can't tell me that Clint Bowyer did not have a bigger pep in his step at Kansas every year. You can't tell me that Kevin Harvick doesn't have a bigger pep in his step at Auto Club every year. So I feel like Larson got up for this one a little bit, partly because of that, but also, look back on the other road courses this season, Brian. I mean, you said you didn't expect them to dominate on a road course. I mean, I expected them to be good and run well because that's what they do, especially this year. But Daytona road course had a really fast car, overcooked it in the late going, spun out, ruined his chances there. Coda had a really fast car. If it didn't rain and Chase Elliott would have had to pit, who would have assumed the lead? Kyle Larson. That's another one. And then you look at Sonoma. He's won the pole here before. He's run well here before in Chip Ganassi equipment. You put him in the best series, in the best car, with the best team, and he's the best driver right now in the world. I don't think that's probably far-fetched to say. And you're going to have what you saw on Sunday. Now, I want to talk about something else, and it's the regular season championship, because we saw Denny Hamlin go out to an incredibly huge lead. I think at one point, Michael Massey pointed out to me that he could DNF the next race and still be a full race up on the second place driver. But Larson is nipping at his heels now. There's still 10 races to go in the regular season, but Larson is creeping up on Hamlin for the regular season championship. And that's a big deal because right now, Denny Hamlin does not have a win. Larson has 3. So that's 15 playoff points right there, not even including his stage wins. And if you win the regular season title, Brian, we know you get 15 extra playoff points. So this could be an interesting battle down the stretch as well.
It will be interesting, and I would expect that gap to keep narrowing over the next few weeks. A lot of the time, the hardest thing to do in the sport is to get that consistent speed, especially at the intermediate tracks, and the Hendrick drivers especially seem to have that almost everywhere. You think of William Byron, who was reeling off all those all those top tens or almost top tens up until this week. Alex Bowman been a little less consistent, but still with 2 wins of his own and looking in as good a spot for the championship as he's about ever looked in his career. Chase Elliott and that team starting to come together, having won at Coda, having a couple good runs over over the last few weeks, and then Larson especially. I still have some questions about his and that team's ability to, you know, finish off races, to close races. That's been a little bit of a problem with Larson from time to time. But it's that team, Hendrick as a whole, has it going on right now. And Hamlin's still getting good finishes, but doesn't seem to be winning stages or just racking up points at the pace that he was earlier in the season. So still looking good for Hamlin generally. I do think that he gets at least one win before before the playoffs begin, but definitely going to be a little bit tighter for that that spot at the top of the standings over the next few weeks.
Yeah, because it felt like at the beginning of the year in the first 5, 6, 7, 8 races, you know, Denny Hamlin had a shot to win a lot of those races, and he was winning stages, he was contending for top fives, he had race-winning speed, and he couldn't finish it off, he couldn't close. And now it feels like he's close, and he's probably in the same sentence with the best of the rest compared to the Hendrick guys, but I'd probably say Truex is maybe a tick above him right now. Even his teammate Kyle Busch might be above him. I mean, Denny Hamlin might be the third quickest car at JGR right now, which if you asked me that a month ago, I would have said that Denny was probably leaps and bounds number one, but that just shows how quickly this sport can change, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I guess it's a good problem to have if you're Joe Gibbs Racing, that have basically those three veteran drivers who are all about in the same ballpark in terms of being able to win on any given race. Looks like Christopher Bell has kind of cooled off a little bit over the last few weeks, but
yeah,
given that he's the new guy on the block, that was probably a little more expected. I definitely think that Kyle Busch has stepped it up in the last few weeks. You're seeing a little bit more speed out of that team. I think Busch has a little more comfort now with Ben Bayshore on the pit box, and be interesting to see what they can accomplish between now and when the playoffs begin.
A couple more things that stood out to me on Sunday at Sonoma, Brian. The Brad Keselowski penalty, that was a gut punch, wasn't it? I mean, they had a strategy that was made for him, got lucky with when the caution came out, would have came out in the lead, trapped the car's lap, a lot of cars lapped down, and then boom, penalty, negated that. That's a gut punch. Truex kind of being the best of the rest. He was really solid, but he just did not hold a candle to the 9 or the 5. And then Ross Chastain. I mean, I don't know what to make of him because he was making dive bomb moves left and right. And then that one wreck in turn 11 where he just totally cut the course. He spun around, grabbed a gear, picked it up, and just drove through the infield section, which is off limits. And then he wasn't penalized for it because NASCAR deemed that he didn't improve his position and he didn't really lose any either. But I was still kind of like, okay, but doesn't this go against the rules? So there's a lot of different things happening in the race. Those three things, though, I think kind of stood out for me. Did anything else in particular stand out to you? Maybe Michael Jordan being in attendance? I don't know.
Yeah, the penalties or lack thereof, definitely interesting there. Bad break for Keselowski for sure. Mm-hmm. I believe Joey Logano was on that same strategy and was able to stay out under that same caution, lead a few laps late in the race, and ultimately wound up in the top five. So I think the 22 was a little bit quicker than the 2 on Sunday, but definitely a missed opportunity there and a tough break for Keselowski. And then, of course, as far as Chastain was concerned, I was also surprised that there was no black flag issued there.
Yeah.
Just because he was able to get back up to speed so quickly and cut off that section of the course. But a little bit of a unique situation there. So, but still kind of a head scratcher for me. Otherwise at Sonoma, it was overall a better race than what I would have expected. I think some of the tire strategy was better than what we'd seen there in the last few years.
Yeah. A lot of fall off.
Good. Yes. Especially a good year, good that they kind of hit that sweet spot with tire wear and having the tire fall off. So you didn't have that situation over the last few years where you would see Truex or Chase Elliott or somebody just kind of run away with it at the end. But Good race overall. Still, definitely, I think would have been better without the stages. Have more opportunity for differing strategies, but
no doubt.
Best, best Sonoma race I'd say within within the last few years.
Let's do this, Brian. Let's get rid of stages at road courses and let's put Sonoma further up on the schedule so that when they go there, the grass is green and the pictures are wonderful. What do you say?
I love it. I'm on board 100%.
Good. Those are the two things that I will do in my first day of being NASCAR president. So, Steve Phelps, if you're listening, do as I say, okay?
Sounds good to me.
This week's Stage Break is brought to you by Nobody Yet. I'm told that we are working on it, but in the meantime, advertising is wide open on the Front Stretch Podcast. You know what to do by now. You've been listening every week for 19 weeks at this point. Contact Kevin Deedy, DDK37, D-E-A-D-Y-K, 37, @gmail.com. If you would like to attach your brand to this website, this podcast, my wonderful shining face, Brian's wonderful shining face, and his words every week on the web, contact Kevin Deedy, DDK37, @gmail.com. Let's throw it over to our chat with Will Rogers and Sam Hunt, who have a special announcement. You guys have heard it by now. Will is running partial Xfinity this season in the 26 Toyota Supra, but there's a lot more to it than meets the eye. It's starting at Nashville, probably going to include some road courses in there, nothing officially announced there yet, but it has to do with GoodRx, and it has to do with Hep C. And you might be thinking to yourself, why the hell is Hepatitis C and GoodRx sponsoring a race car? Well, look no further, because Will Rogers and Sam Hunt are going to tell you all about it and why right here. Here's my conversation with Will Rogers and Sam Hunt. We got a special treat on the show this week. Not one, but two guests on the Front Stretch Podcast. Sam Hunt of Sam Hunt Racing and Will Rogers. And you guys got a very special announcement. Tell the people what's going on today, specifically this week, and for the rest of the season. I'll let you folks take it away.
All right. Well, with that, we're super happy to announce that I'll be racing for Sam Hunt Racing several times this season, embarking on a new partnership, not only between me and the race team, but then also a few other groups that are helping support a campaign we've built over the last few years. And that's what's going to be called Race to End Hep C. So very, very excited to announce that. What it really stands for is not so much racing. We're getting into this, obviously using NASCAR and the platform to voice to millions of people. But what it's really about is helping eradicate diseases such as hepatitis C, something that's been curable for almost a decade now, yet millions of people still suffer from those conditions. And me being a liver health ambassador, somebody that's personally endured liver disease, this is my time and this is my way to stand up and advocate for a cause that's absolutely achievable for us to eradicate it. So that's it. That's the news.
It's awesome. We're going to get to all that, but I want to touch on a few things before that. So, Will, you're going to be making your debut with the team at Nashville. Sam, from a team owner's perspective, you haven't been to Nashville, but nobody's been to Nashville because nobody's been there for 10 years now. So what was the thought process of getting Will back behind the wheel of a race car and starting at a place that everybody is starting from square one?
Yeah, I think it's no easy task for any of these guys. A lot of them have done some testing in Nashville. You know, even the past 5-6 years, while the track, wasn't hosting any racing, it was a popular testing facility. So I think there'll be a couple guys that have done that. But, like you touched on, I think all in all, it's a fairly neutral site where there won't really be as many home field advantages as some tracks are to the more experienced guys. I know Nashville, with Will's partners, it was just a good place. It's going to be a popular weekend. So I think it was a home run as far as scheduling that first race. Getting Will in the simulator, at Toyota, and getting him a part of the TRD family is going to be helpful. And I don't know. It's like you said, I've never been there. So I'm a rookie to it just as much as Will is. I know we'll have a good piece and we do have practice there. So we'll be able to make the car better and let Will kind of, you know, get back in the rhythm of racing oval tracks, because it's been what, how long?
About 2 years.
Yeah, it's been 2 years since Will's run on an oval. So, like I say all the time, I couldn't do it. And Will's obviously more talented than me, because I'm sitting in this chair and he's driving the race car. But I've got full faith in him. And, you know, Will's a guy that, you know, I've, you know, really thought highly of for years, dating back to, you know, the K&N racing and how he carries himself and how he works so hard for each opportunity. And I think that makes, you know, this whole deal exciting for me, because, you know, Will has just worked so hard, you know, with, you know, these partners and just pushing to, you know, to race for a bigger cause and seeing it start to gain traction and have a platform to, you know, kick off with is exciting, because that's, you know, that's kind of how I had to race back when, you know, I did the East stuff. And right, it's just cool to see a young guy, you know, trying to make it work like he is.
I like how you say young guy, because he's only 1 year younger than you, Sam.
Yeah, but I'm aging light speed doing this.
That's true. That's true. You're going gray. I can see through the screen.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Silver Fox.
Lack of maintenance and overwork. Don't take care of myself.
Well, I want to touch on something that you mentioned, because, you know, I've had both of you guys on my podcast, Victory Lane, and talked about your stories, right? Sam, your story is incredible, and I don't think a lot of people are aware of it. I wish we had time to get into all the details here. And Will, so is yours, from the health perspective and also from a geographical perspective, being the only NASCAR driver from the state of Hawaii. But both of you have something in common, and it's not racing in K&N. It's that you have scratched and clawed to get to where you are today, and you've had a lot more valleys than you've had peaks. But now that you're together, forming this alliance here for a multi-race partnership in 2021, my question is, for Will, why did you choose Sam? And for Sam, why did you choose Will? Because it seems like a match made in heaven from a 30,000-foot perspective.
Yeah, it's exactly that. It's the reason why I picked here, reason why I've really pursued working with Sam and his team and stayed really close to him, you know, trying to get my my bearings around the guys in the shop and just the way that they work, is because, you know, they put forth that effort. They show that even though there aren't a lot of peaks, you know, there are a lot of valleys, you guys can get through it. And that is absolutely something that I'm looking for. You know, I'm not looking to come here and just race and then walk right out the door. You know, I'm looking for a place where I can plant roots, be confident in the program that we have, not only on the racetrack, but off. You know, the trust has to come in many different ways, especially when you're dealing with major campaigns with real major partners, you know, those that I've been working on for a long time. And, you know, if there's any loose ends, it could jeopardize everything. So that's why I put a lot of stock into Sam Hunt Racing, and I'm excited to be here. I think that this is the place to be. We can fight adversity together.
Yeah, and I think, you know, from my side, first of all, it's fun having someone like Will, or someone that, you know, has similar experiences, you know, with differences, because you're on the same page about a lot, like right off the bat.
Unspoken things too, probably, right?
Yeah, just situational awareness, you know, expectations, you know, what goes into this, you know, on a day-to-day level, you know, kind of a driver that has been in the trenches his whole life. So he's got an appreciation for the rest of these guys that live in the trenches. So, you know, I think it makes it a lot of fun for me. And then I think, you know, I've always taken my branding and my presentation very serious, you know, what my race cars look like, you know, how we activate with sponsors, you know, it's just something I've always been so OCD about, because that's how I'm going to get to where I want this company to be ultimately. And Will's the same way as a driver. So there's, you know, I think we both put a lot of value in the same things, which just makes us very seamless. And I think from a branding and activation standpoint, you know, it's going to be really cool to unveil.
So, Will, you got good RX on board. And if I have this correct, I think this is their first foray into NASCAR as a sponsor. So that's got to feel pretty good for you as a driver and also, Sam, as a team owner, bringing a new sponsor into the sport. That's always fun.
It is. It's very, very good. I've done this several times, bringing new partners into the sport.
Yeah.
So I'm no stranger to it, right? GoodRx, this is their first real experience in NASCAR. I feel like they've probably had ad space run during a lot of NASCAR races before, so NASCAR fans are familiar with who they are. But for them, being affiliated with a driver and a team and a cause like this, this will be the first time. So very, very excited to lead that charge. They're a fantastic company to work with. They're a young company, but very, very successful. They've only been around a decade or so, but they've helped millions and millions of people with their needs. And it's really exciting to have them behind us, believing in the cause and looking forward to the future. I feel like this is a partnership that we can grow and nurture for a long time. And, it could be really fruitful for everyone.
So you guys mentioned, this is bigger than just racing, right? This is a race to end Hep C. And, in the press release, I know, Will, we've talked before about your liver disease that you have. I'm not going to try to pronounce it. I'm going to call it PSC for short. Yeah. And you have started your own foundation to help find a cure for this. It was on an Arca West car, not K&N, back in the day a couple years ago. So again, this is bigger than racing for all those listening, right? This is not just a situation where, Will wants to get back in the race car. Sam has some races to fill. Sure, that's part of it, but this is bigger than racing for both of you guys.
Yeah, we'd love to race. We're racers, right, at the end of the day. But in order to go racing, there has to be a real meaning behind it. And I feel like over the last few years, I've figured out what that is. And I've been fortunate enough to have these experiences to be able to build this equity in the space to know, okay, this is how I can make my difference. And yes, because of my liver disease that I went through severely as a child and still endure to this day, but luckily it's underlying and I live a healthy lifestyle. That has given me the opportunity to stand up and be that advocate for liver health, starting with hepatitis C. So with my foundation, us forming that about a year ago, really the goal has always been to get it off the ground with one specific, disease state that we can help support. It just happens to be Hep C this year. And then hopefully in years to come, we help support several other disease states like primary sclerosing cholangitis or NASH or PBC, some of the other major liver diseases that, may have some negative stigma about them or may not have a treatment yet, but are getting close to it. So that's our goal. And I think we're off to a good start.
Yeah. So you talk about having a stigma, right? So I'm dumb. So when I think hepatitis C, I think of it as an STD and something that's kind of taboo to talk about, right? So for us to be talking about this here, some people may be thinking, wait, hold on. What does liver disease have to do with Hep C? Why is this in racing? Why is this on a race car? Can you kind of like tie up the loose ends here for the people that may be like me and be thinking, how is this connected?
Right. Well, I think putting it plainly, hepatitis C doesn't discriminate, right? It's not just potentially an STD. It's not just potentially affected by something that you did maybe earlier in life that wasn't necessarily, some of the right things to do, right? It could happen to anybody. There are several, actually many different types of hepatitis, but hepatitis C specifically is the most predominant, I guess. But luckily it is curable. So what we're really trying to do is break down that negative stigma and break down the barriers to help people understand that it's not just potentially affected by, an STD type way of getting it, right? So you could be any age of any gender of any race and it can happen to you, but there is a treatment for it. And if you just take the necessary steps for education and then testing and then treatment, it's curable.
Until Will and I, started talking about this idea, like I didn't even realize it was curable.
Yeah.
Like, I thought it was, like a few others where it's like, if you have it, you have it. And, there's no fighting and there's no curing. So I know in the past, 2-3 months, like that's been news to me. And I'm sure it's going to be news to a lot of other people.
News to me, yeah.
The message. Yeah.
And for Hep C specifically, it is so easy or so common among, the older baby boomer generation, because back in the day, there weren't really sanitization kind of policies for going to the dentist or getting a tattoo or something like that. And, you know, it's the way that you contract hepatitis C is blood-to-blood contact, and that is something that could happen back in the day. But I think the point is that we want to break down the negative stigma so that people understand that, you know, unfortunately, everybody is vulnerable to this, but there's hope for it.
Yeah.
So let's get back to the racetrack for a second. Sam, you know, we talked about Will has not been in an Xfinity car for a couple years now. I think Homestead 2019 was your last start, Will. So as a team owner, right, who's had a rough stretch of it the past couple weeks, still a small team, trying to get their sea legs under them for this season specifically, a few different drivers in the car, any hesitancy in putting a driver like Will in the car after a year plus off? I'm sure that practice is going to help immensely. But from a team owner, was there any hesitancy with that?
No, because I think Will is a student of the game. You know, I think, you know, he's very calculated. I mean, you know him. He has a plan for everything he does, and it's well orchestrated and it's well thought out. And going back to his situational awareness and understanding of, you know, whatever position he's in, I think makes me comfortable because he's not the guy that's going to go out there and crash the car, you know, trying to be 13th quickest versus 15th quickest. It's like he's got an understanding of where we're at as a team, you know, where we're trying to go, and, you know, where he fits into that. And I think that's where he's going to, you know, excel the most, because you don't always get that situational awareness from, you know, every single driver, you know, especially the rookies that, you know, think that they just have to just overachieve and blow everybody out of the water, you know, when they haven't been behind the wheel or haven't been behind the wheel in years. Mm-hmm. You know, my whole motto with this company, and I've known you through a lot of the stages of it, is, you know, crawl, walk, run, you know, and I learned to crawl when, you know, I had the K&N team and I had two cars and a toolbox and a van, and like, you know, that was me learning to crawl, and I learned to crawl and walk, and now I'm, you know, trying to figure out how to run from walking, and, you know, but I've always been aware of that, and I'll never say, hey, you know, we have the best car in the garage, or we have the biggest team in the garage. I'm very honest about my business, and I think Will just fits, you know, that mold very well, and I think he's gone through a lot of similar experience through his driving career. So
yeah,
not to go off subject, but I think, you know, him just being so situationally aware and being an open-minded student, you know, I think when it comes to the road course stuff, you know, he's going to be able to tell us a lot that we might not even know. But he's also very humble about, you know, the oval stuff and the fact that he hasn't been in the car, and, you know, he wants to use Nashville to, you know, to get up to speed, to work with the guys, start to build a foundation and a notebook for him as a driver with our team. So I think everybody being on the same page about, you know, the expectation and the goal it just sets us up for success. And if we do, you know, hit a home run or overachieve, then, you know, more power to us.
That's what you guys do, overachieve. I got a couple more quick things and I'll let you guys run. So, you know, I asked Sam if there was any hesitancy in putting you in the car, Will, but I know you have been busy in the last couple years driving, coaching, on the racetrack, off the racetrack. So real quick, tell us what you have been up to, because even though people may not see you in NASCAR or in ARCA, you're still busy.
Yeah, very busy. Obviously building this business and several other of my businesses, including ones in the virtual world. I've been doing a lot of iRacing now with Space Station Gaming and our Coca-Cola iRacing team. So that's fun. So I've kind of stayed behind the wheel virtually. But then, you know, in reality, I've done a good amount of coaching with drivers and road courses. I kind of specialize in helping young stock car guys that and gals that don't know how to necessarily road race or don't have the confidence they need going into some future races, and I help them get up to speed. Had some great success with that. So those are always good ways to get behind the wheel. I've done a few ARCA races here and there for various teams, which has been, you know, good to kind of just stay brushed up on the NASCAR thing. But other than that, I just took a job actually in South Carolina being a part-time instructor at the BMW Performance Center. So that's been kind of fun. It kind of, honestly, a lot of people have asked me, so why are you doing this? I said, it's a way for me to break away, right? I get to go for 1 or 2 days a week and just relax, take racing off of mine, go wheel some cars, and that's it, you know, just have a good time. So that's what I've been up to. As far as getting behind the wheel at Nashville, you know, there's definitely, you know, I'm pretty tough on myself as far as, you know, judging my performance, my ability, and what I think I can do. You know, but with that said, I feel like with Sam, you know, having, you know, a really good solid program behind him, the support from Toyota, me being able to go do work at the TRD Sam and then talk with other drivers, you know, I should be as warmed up as I possibly can be. And, you know, definitely gonna have realistic expectations about it, but also have confidence at the same time. So I don't know.
We're gonna bring back an unscratched race car.
That's right.
That's right, Will. He's pulling your leg as he's saying that.
It was funny in Mid-Ohio this week, Chris, who actually did a really good job, you know, the whole all weekend it was like, you know, after the past couple weeks, we're gonna finish this race, you know, and I think the green light checkered with two to go, you know, we were seventh or eighth, which, you know, for us and for Chris was going to be, you know, a huge day. And I came on the radio right before the restart and I was like, Chris, like, you know, everybody's going to be aggressive here, but, you know, we got to bring the race car home. And within the next lap, you know, the 19 cleaned us out and we pulled in another crash car. So this is just me personally venting. I've got full faith in Will. But like I said, he's a situational racer. He's smart. And I know he's going to do everything he can for me.
I actually want to end with a trivia question for you, Will. Sam has obviously driven a Toyota before. He's got Toyota on his chest. He's paying the bills to Toyota. We all know this, right? Will, have you ever driven a Toyota in your NASCAR career? Pop quiz.
So, fun fact, yes. I've driven a Toyota once.
Yes, I have it. Do you know when?
K&N West Series, I believe it was 2016.
Do you know where?
Oh, no. You know what? I think it was at Evergreen.
It sure was in the 06 car, Evergreen 2016.
The 06 at Evergreen, it was my backup car. We ended up losing brakes in practice and had an excursion with the outside wall and had to roll out the backup, and the backup just happened to be a Camry.
What did you own the car?
Oh, no. Okay. Yeah.
But, I'm glad you remember that because I went on Racing Reference and I was like, I think this is his first start in a Toyota. And out of all your K&N West starts, there's that one start in 2016. So you got it.
Yeah. I had
no
clue.
No, I mean, I totally forgot about that. So good to reminisce on old memories.
Yeah. Always good. Well, fellas, this has been awesome. And again, really cool stuff that you guys are doing. It's bigger than racing, as cliche as that is. It's really true, and it's good to see two guys scratch and claw their way to the top here. So best of luck at Nashville, and I know it's a multi-race deal, and you guys haven't announced the specifics yet, but I know, Sam, you teased the road courses. Anybody with a brain knows Will on road courses is a good match, so we can expect to see you on some road courses, right? I would hope.
Yep.
There's a good chance.
Yes, there is a very good chance. I have a feeling. Yes. All right. Well, again, thank you guys for joining me today. Appreciate it. And best of luck down the road. Really cool stuff that you're doing. And I hope that you bring some new eyes and some new ears to the sport and educate some people like me and Sam.
Thanks, Davey. Appreciate it as always, buddy.
You got it, man. White flag is out on the Front Stretch Pod. Got to give a big, big thank you to Sam Hunt at Sam Hunt Racing, obviously Will Rogers as well, and Trisha Westfall, the PR who helped coordinate that conversation. Had a lot of back and forth leading up to it, so very thankful for all of them being flexible and squeezing us in to talk about a very important thing in the world right now, and it's making its way to NASCAR, so if that's good to see it getting some more attention. Let's welcome back Brian Gable to the show to talk about the All-Star race for a hot second. And I emphasize hot second because I don't really want to spend too much time on this because, I mean, I don't understand the format. I assume you don't really get it. And honestly, I don't really care because it just doesn't feel like All-Star races in the past. The timing is weird. I don't love the venue. The format is just too wonky. Talk me off the ledge here, Brian, or don't.
Yeah, I mean, no, I agree with you about the venue for sure. I know that the reason that we're heading out to Texas Motor Speedway this weekend is basically as a concession to them to get a race at Circuit of the Americas on the schedule. Right. But yeah, definitely not my pick for an all-star race venue.
Let me say this though. I am totally on board with removing points races from Texas. If that's what it takes, like, I'm cool with it. Get it rid of 500 miles of Texas and no points races. So if this is what it takes, I'll take the L in the short term.
Yeah, nothing against the good folks at Texas Motor Speedway or the fans there, but definitely not a bad idea.
Yeah.
I did really think that last year NASCAR was onto something when they had the All-Star race at a Bristol Motor Speedway. Yeah. The only thing they really needed to do was make those stages a little bit longer, and I thought they had a really good show in the making. Otherwise, I wouldn't mind seeing it even go back to Charlotte Motor Speedway or somewhere like Martinsville, but definitely a situation where they need to, you know, at this point, just pick a format and stick with it. I'd love to see the elimination element from the early 2000s come back, if that's what it takes. But I mean, I still think there's a place, for the All-Star race, in the current schedule that we have for NASCAR. I mean, having stages in every single, regular points paying race does take that kind of specialness of the shootout format away from the All-Star race. But
right.
if they could just find a venue that worked and a good format, I think we could get some of that real excitement for the All-Star race back.
Do I hear a North Wilkesboro? Do I hear a Rockingham? Do I hear a Bowman Gray? Am I getting the people riled up?
If I'm not footing the bill for North Wilkesboro, make it happen.
Yeah, Marcus Smith, if you're listening, just make it happen. But honestly, though, I mean, I think I agree with you. I mean, I do think the All-Star race still does have a place on the schedule. But just every year with the format changes, the venue changes, it seems so manufactured and fake. Like, and I hate saying that because I used to love the All-Star race. And I don't know if it's because of the rules package that we have or if it's because of the competition. Like, I don't know what it is, but it needs some form of revival. Like, same thing with the Clash. It needs some form of revival. I wouldn't hate if they did something similar to what they had been doing with the championship, at least that one year. You know, if you move the championship around every year, I'd be in favor of that. Kevin Harvick's on the record of saying that. Do the same thing for the All-Star race. But a lot of people have said, same thing with the banquet, right? Like, Las Vegas is cool, but we don't really want to go all the way out there and spend all this money just to go there. We can have it in Nashville or in Charlotte and have the same fun times, right? So that's what they did. All-Star race going to Texas, like, that's a pretty long haul, especially coming back from Sonoma, right? There's a lot of racetracks real close to home. Charlotte, Darlington, Martinsville, Bristol, not even mentioning all of the local short tracks that host Advanced Auto Parts Weekly Series races, that host ARCA Menards Series West and East races, you know? So I think there's a way to revive this event, and it's going to take a lot of infrastructure updating. It's going to take a lot of marketing. It's going to take a lot of hand-holding with certain different people from different sanctioning bodies. But if they want to keep this event, then they need to do something, because you're right, Brian. I mean, having stages in the All-Star race is not unique when you have stages in every single race. And that's what was unique about it. And now, to me, it just feels like this manufactured race that people try to get up for, and the introductions are cool. Like, that's great. I'm sure Eddie Gosches has some stuff up his sleeve with his last race and No Limits. Everything's bigger in Texas. But I'm just not feeling it this year. Like, the timing's off, too. You know what I mean? It feels late.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, it's a shame, because sometimes I feel like it's just like a lack of confidence on NASCAR's part. Like, they just don't know what to do with this race and what format they want with it. It's like it used to be that you'd see with previous title sponsors of the Cup Series, it was almost like a celebration of, you know, not just the stars of NASCAR, but the relationship of those past title sponsors.
Yeah.
That they had with NASCAR. And when framed against that idea, it was kind of a natural thing to, you know, like you suggested, be able to market the All-Star race more effectively as a special event. especially when it was, you know, in Charlotte the week before the Coca-Cola 600, kind of added to the profile of both those events. And now now we got a random weekend in mid-June here at a track that's never had a history of hosting this event. So I hope this turns into the beginning of a new era for the All-Star race, where we start trending in the right direction with it. Because I'd hate to see it go away completely, but yeah, it's definitely a bit of a concern when you have your hardcore fans just not feeling the yeah. love for this event.
Yeah, yeah, it's well said. And I will get off my soapbox after I say this. I saw a picture surface on Twitter, and I quote tweeted it. Do you remember how cool the pit crew competitions were in the late 2000s, early 2010s? Those were unreal. Let's bring those back.
Absolutely, a highlight of that weekend, and something that I would like to see return again, as long as I'm not footing the bill.
Yeah, that's true. And I think they're doing like a hybrid, modified type of pit crew challenge this All-Star race, but it's in the actual race. I mean, I would like to see the pit crews get their shine, get their glitz and glamour, have it televised, make this big thing. That was so much fun. So it's well said by you, though. I think they need to do something, and it feels like a weird spot for the sanctioning body to be, because it's like they don't want to get rid of the event, but they don't know what to do with it. So I guess we'll watch and we'll find out anyway.
Checkered flag, here I come.
Checkered flag is out on the podcast this week. We do our do's and don'ts every single week. Brian, I don't know if you've listened before, but you know, when we had Massey on, we had moves and moats. When we had Zach on, we had zoos and zonts. So now we have booze and bones. I guess we're going to do that this week. So you're the guest of honor, so I will give you the floor. What is your do/boo, and what is your don't/bont for this week's All-Star race?
Well, I'd say the biggest do for this week is, do you have a plan in place for being at the front and the back of the field? Obviously, we have a brand new format for the All-Star race again, but the biggest part of this format is we have all these field inversions. Some of it's going to be a random number of cars. Some of it's going to be the whole field. What they're trying to do, of course, is to mix up the field, get the fast cars to the back of the field at certain points, get other cars up front. So I feel like if you're going into this with the mindset of, oh, we'll just, you know, set up our car for a quick short run, just blow away from the field, that's not going to work out. So you'll want to plan for being at the front of the field for part of the event. You'll want to plan it at being in the back, and maybe, you know, not having that advantage of clean air, and just being cognizant of where you are, you know, how many laps you have left, what stage it is, because it's going to take a good amount of preparation to figure out how you're gonna handle this, and especially how you're going to manage it on race day. The biggest don't that I have is still traditional for the All-Star race: don't bring a car you're not okay with wrecking.
Amen.
But I mean, like we've talked about, maybe the All-Star race has lost a little bit of its luster from an excitement and marketing standpoint, but this is still one of those few times a year where it's either bring back the trophy or the steering wheel. And of course, Texas Motor Speedway, not always an agent of chaos like a Bristol or Martinsville.
You mean single file around the bottom isn't chaos? What?
Usually it's not, but ever since that they repaved Texas beginning in 2017, and they kind of flattened out turns one and two, mm-hmm. we've never really seen a situation where that groove widened out. That can still be very, very treacherous, very easy to make a mistake in there. And even in the July race last year, you had a couple guys get tangled up going into turn one. You saw Truex get basically turned in front of the whole field there, mm-hmm. triggered that big wreck that wiped out a lot of good cars that afternoon. So you want to be competitive in this race for sure, but maybe don't bring your best piece that you had set aside for the playoffs.
Well said. I'm going to keep mine short and sweet because they are nowhere near as thought out and eloquent as Brian. But my due is to be thankful that this is not a points race. I mentioned it earlier. No disrespect to Eddie Gossage or the fine folks at Texas. I love y'all in Texas, but your racetrack sucks. It does. I'm pulling a Jordan. If you guys listen to NASCAR podcast, I died laughing when Jordan Bianchi on the teardown was talking about Dover, and he just goes, "Dover sucks." And I was like, "Whoa, Jordan, wow." And I think he said the same thing about Texas. I mean, it's not a good racetrack. It does not put on good racing right now. They've tried PJ1. They've tried different packages. It's just not good. So be thankful that they are racing at Texas, and it does not count towards the championship, because I sure am. My don't for this week is to try to understand the format. Don't try, because I'm not going to. I'm just going to watch the race. I'm going to see if people on Twitter can explain it to me, which is always a great idea. And I'm going to enjoy listening to the radio chatter, too, which kind of leads me to my lock of the week that I'll go over real quick. The lock for this week is a good Radioactive on Fox, because all these drivers are going to be so confused. They're going to be like, why am I going to the back for this stage? Is this the reset? Is this an invert? Is this a pill drop? What is this? People are going to have a field day with all the radio chatter, because drivers won't know what the hell's going on, and the fans won't either. Hopefully the tower does, and hopefully TV does, but I don't think many other people will.
Davey, do you remember, I think it was the All-Star race in 2016. It was the year that they tried the option tires, and I think it was Clint Bowyer's team where there was one pit stop where they put the options on the left side and the regular tires on the right side. Yes. And NASCAR was like, "Well, no, wait, you can't do that." And the 14 team was like, "Well, you never told us that we could do that." Actually, Bowyer was in the 14 car. That must have been 2017 that they did that, but. Certainly one of the more chaotic recent moments of the All-Star race, and with the new format again, you can't help but wonder if we'll see something similar.
Yeah, I actually like that option tire thing. That's like a whole nother rabbit hole to go down, kind of like F1-esque, but that's another story for another day. All right, Brian, let's make the people some money. You guys, if you're listening, you know how this works. Odds courtesy of William Hill Sportsbook, good old Bill Hill, as I like to call him. We are going to go through NASCAR All-Star matchups, driver against driver, whoever's going to finish higher, not in stage one, not in stage two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten, at the end of this thing. Quickly, rapid fire. Brian, are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right. Kyle Larson versus Martin Truex Jr.
Oh, boy. You know what? Go with the hot hand. Go with Kyle Larson.
I agree. I'm going with Larson. Chase Elliott versus Kyle Busch.
I like Chase Elliott for this one.
I do as well. Hendrick's hot. Alex Bowman and Kevin Harvick.
Boy, oh boy. You know what? I'll take Harvick on this one, based off the recent record at Texas.
Okay, I'll be different, and I'll go Alex Bowman. Hendrick, mile and a half, quick. Denny Hamlin and William Byron.
Let's go Willie B for that one.
I'll ride with Willie B too. Penske teammates, Brad K and YRB, Ryan Blaney.
I'll take Ryan Blaney. I like the fight that I've seen out of that 12 team lately.
He is a small favorite, so sprinkle a little bit on that if you like. Joey Logano versus Christopher Bell.
I'll take Joey Logano for that one.
Yeah, I will too. I think that's a no-brainer. Austin Dillon versus Kurt Busch. That's a good one.
Ooh, that is a good one. You know what? I'm going to go Austin Dillon.
Okay, he is the overwhelming favorite, so if you want to sprinkle some on Kurt, he might make a little bit. And last one this week, Ryan Newman versus Cole Custer.
Ooh, wow. Ryan Newman.
Cole Custer. I think he's the favorite by a little bit, and I'll ride with him. Hopefully Ryan Newman does not get sucker punched while he's sitting on pit road this year. That would be a sight to see.
Definitely one of the more memorable moments of the last few All-Star races.
Yeah, sure was. Well, Brian, this has been fun. Thank you for hopping on with me. I've called you a wordsmith a couple times, but I truly do mean it. You do awesome stuff for us here at Front Stretch. Where can people follow you and find your work?
Well, best place to find me these days is right on frontstretch.com.
There you go. Brian Gable, ladies and gentlemen, on the Front Stretch Podcast. That will do it for this week on the pod, episode 19 of the year. If you like what you heard here today, do me a favor. It sounds trivial, but it really does help us out. Leave a rating and a review on iTunes. We should have that bug fixed for you guys. People behind the scenes at Front Stretch have been working hard to fix the feed over there on Apple. Also available on Spotify, Google, anywhere you usually get your podcasts and consume them, we should be available there for your consumption. For Brian Gable, I am Davey Siegel. We will catch you guys back next week for another episode of the pod with another guest from the NASCAR world at the best seat at the track on the Front Stretch Pod. Good luck with the math this weekend, everybody.